This episode is brought to you by Diageo Bar Academy. Learn more at DiageoBarAcademy.com. That's D-I-A-G-E-O BarAcademy.com.
This episode is brought to you by Just Egg. You can't have plant-based breakfast without a plant-based egg. You can get started with a free sample. Just head to ju.st/HRN.
This week on Meat and Three, we dedicate our stories to elders, grandparents, and family members who came before us.
Some people called on the phone. What time is your appointment? Mine's 2:45. Our friend, the dentist, he was 3:30. And it was like a social event.
It's a small island. A lot of them I knew when I was a kid. So it was, you know, to really help them feel like they weren't alone.
It's partly this communal nature of food, and so it can operate as a bridge, not just between neighbors and friends, but also between the living and the dead.
Listen to Meat and Three wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, hello, welcome to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Sherry Bayer, and it is Wednesday, April 14th, 2021. This is the 286th episode of this series, which is dedicated to behind-the-scenes talent in the hospitality industry. Today, my guest is an award-winning chef and advocate for the culinary profession, and I'll introduce him fully in a moment. First, as I do in every show, I will start out with my PR tip. And then later, we will have my speed round game, industry news discussion, solo dining experience, and the final question. As the founder of Bayer Public Relations, I'm going to tip the show off with my PR tip of the week. So today's tip is to be soigné. By my guest definition, soigné, and that's S-O-I-G-N-E, means elegantly maintained, thoughtfully cared for. In other words, being well-groomed and polished. It's about our appearance and what it says to the world. And how we present ourselves on the outside certainly reflects our insides. So let's dress to impress, as we only have one chance to make a good first impression. That's my tip today. Now, I'm thrilled to have my guest joining me. It is Gavin Kaysen, an award-winning chef and founder of Soigné Hospitality Group in Minneapolis, who is known for his nationally recognized group of restaurants, as well as his leadership in the culinary profession. Gavin's restaurants include Spoon and Stable, a 2015 James Beard Award finalist for Best New Restaurant, Demi, an intimate 20-seat tasting menu experience, and Belcour Bakery at Cooks of Crocus Hill. Gavin is the co-founder of Heart of the House Foundation. He's the president of the Mentor BKB Foundation Team USA, and he's a featured chef in a new book from Fiden, Today's Special, 20 Leading Chefs Choose 100 Emerging Chefs. Gavin is also a proud recipient of two James Beard Awards, Rising Star Chef of the Year in 2008 and Best Chef Midwest in 2018. Without further ado, Gavin, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
My pleasure. I'm so excited to have you on. I know we've done a brief interview following your win of the James Beard Awards back in 2018, mm-hmm. Which was amazing. And but I haven't had the opportunity to dive into your whole background and everything else you're up to. And we'll see how much we can cover in 45 minutes.
Yeah, it's always the case, right? Lots to talk about.
Yeah, a lot to talk about, because even with my bio on you, I skipped out on many other things, because you've done a tremendous amount of accomplishments over the years. So, but let's dive in then, and take me back to a bit to your childhood, or what inspired mm-hmm. you to want to become a chef.
Yeah, I mean, it all kind of, for me, it started fairly early on. You know, I started to bake a lot with my grandmother when I was seven. And I wouldn't say that like that was the moment in which I decided, oh, this is what I'm going to do the rest of my life. What I did recognize was that that was a moment in which I recognized how food brought people to a table, specifically my family, number one. And then what I also recognized is that putting together ingredients of food and maybe not always that many ingredients made people happy. And so, you know, I do remember that being like a really big sticking point in my childhood. And so, you know, cooking and baking was something that I always did a lot of, and it was something that was a great, I guess in some ways kind of an escape for me as a kid, and something I always gravitated towards. And then when I was 15, I met the right guy at the right time in my life who kind of took me under his wing. And showed me the ropes a little bit of what it meant to be in this industry. And that's really what sort of, you know, made me decide like, yeah, this is absolutely something that I want to do. But the idea of cooking and the idea of hospitality is what was what ultimately drove me to it.
Yeah. So then where did you gain restaurant experience following and eventually come to New York City, and who were your mentors along the way?
Yeah, so I mean that was kind of a big jump to go to New York. I mean I had gone from culinary school in Vermont, which was New England Culinary Institute, and then I went from there to Domaine Chandon in Napa Valley as my first internship, and then I moved from Napa over to Switzerland, and that was my second internship. My dad was there for business. A lot, like every 6 months. And so I knew that if I took that job in Switzerland, at least I would have an opportunity to see my dad once every 6 months. So I'd have somebody come and visit me. and that was important. But I kind of just took that job as I was 21 years old. I just felt like I didn't have anything to lose.
Right.
You know, and it was a crazy move. And then I moved to San Diego, and San Diego is what got me to New York City, you know, and that got me to New York because I had sent a letter to Danielle. So I had written Danielle an email, or actually, I think I actually wrote him a letter, Balud, and that was in 2005, and I requested a stage. And I requested a stage for 7 days. So it was like one full week. And so what I expected was to do one full week with him. And that 1 week turned into five years and then 8 years basically of working for him. But, you know, that was 2005. So 2007, I ended up taking the job with Chef and running Café Balud in New York City. So it's sort of funny how, you know, I look back on my career now and think about writing that letter to him and thinking like, oh yeah, maybe he'll take me as a stage, and then it turned into an actual job. And you know, that letter actually, when I left Café to move back home to Minneapolis, in the top right-hand corner of that letter, Danielle wrote to his HR director to hold on to the letter because I might be a good future chef for him.
Oh, so, wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, so funny.
So when did you, or what motivated you then to leave Danielle after so many years and move back to Minneapolis, which I believe is your hometown?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, I grew up.
Oh, I was just going to say, when did you, I guess, have the idea that you wanted to have your own restaurant? Was that something way, you know, at the beginning of your career, or just sort of as you were as a chef, you sort of got the idea of, might be nice to have my own place?
I think I shouldn't say it this way, but I think a majority of chefs probably go into this thinking themselves, maybe one day I want to open up my own business, or one day I do want to. And then often I think what happens is you end up seeing what that sacrifice means, and then you choose to realize that, yeah, maybe it is for me, or maybe it's not. And I've had friends do, you know, both, you know, do stay in the industry and work for somebody, or go off and do what I've done, which is open my own restaurants. I think from an entrepreneurial perspective, I've always had that spirit. So I've always wanted to have my own business. I've always really been inspired by those, honestly, those challenges of what that means. And, you know, when I worked for Danielle, I don't remember how far into the program we were together. But I do remember speaking to him and saying, at some point I am going to leave. I don't know when that point is, but whenever that point comes to be, I certainly want to be able to have that discussion with you in detail. And that was, you know, mainly Danielle is a mentor of mine, has been, continues to be. And I just think that there is a lot of responsibility that needs to be put also on a mentee, you know, for you to be open and honest and transparent with the person who's teaching you, to say, here's what I'm thinking, here's where I want to go, this is my plan, what do you think? And if it's off and they don't think you're ready, then it's important to hear that. And so when we first started to talk about it, it was probably not until 3 or 4 years after that first conversation that I actually left. It was not a quick decision. It wasn't anything about, you know, leaving New York or anything like that. It was just, I knew that I wanted to do my own thing. And I had looked at and looked for restaurant spaces in New York City. I had looked in Minneapolis. I was born in Los Angeles and I have a lot of Southern California connections. So I looked in Southern California,
at places. I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
And so what ended up clicking the best for me and what felt the most connecting to me was to move back to Minneapolis where my family is. And so we decided to do that.
What year was that?
That was in 2014 because I, 2014.
Okay. And then you set out, you started with Spoon and Stable as your first restaurant.
Yeah.
Tell us a bit about the concept of that and then how you've grown your restaurant group, which obviously I took my tip from you today.
Yeah. I like that. So Spoon and Stable was the first, which we opened in 2014. It's in a building that was erected in 1906 that was originally a horse stable. So hence the name Spoon and Stable. And the spoon part of it comes from my affection of collecting spoons. And by way of collecting, sometimes that's just, they find their way in my pocket. but it's a really beautiful 6,500 square foot space. You know, the floor to ceilings are like 28 feet tall. I have a huge skylight in the middle of the dining room that was originally always there, and it actually runs the whole length of the space, but you only see it in the dining room, and then you can also see it in the back kitchen. So when it's sunny here, I mean, you just see loads of sunlight spill into the restaurant, which just feels so great, especially after long winters that we endure here. And the restaurant is really, you know, it's a collection of, I mean, I would call it sort of modernized American cuisine. And while that's kind of a generic term, I think it's probably meant to be that way for a reason, which is, you know, a lot of the food that we do here has a focus on everything from heritage and grains, which is very, very prominent in our community because of how the Twin Cities became wealthy back in the day with all of the mills and you know, all of the flours and everything. And then, you know, we focus a lot on the beautiful proteins that are in the Midwest, the pork and the beef and the chicken, pheasant, duck, all of the great farmers. And then, of course, in the summer and the spring, the bounty of vegetables that we're able to tap into because, you know, the beauty of being here is that I can be in Minneapolis. We're in a neighborhood in Minneapolis. It's called the North Loop, which was the representation of what the train station was called back in the day. But 25 minutes from my doorstep is a majority of the farmers we work with, which is really exciting. So yeah. We then opened up Belcour restaurant, which was in Wayzata, which is about 15 miles from Spoon and Stable. And Belcour was a French bistro and bakery. We unfortunately had to close that restaurant during all of COVID. It was a really seasonal restaurant. It was on a lake. It's in a great community in the Twin Cities, but it was just a little bit too much for me to run during the COVID time, so we had to trim a little bit of that off, and we were able to preserve the bakery, and we moved that across the street from Spoon and Stable. It's in a kitchen store called Cooks of Crocus Hill, so we're kind of a store within a store, but we have a whole kitchen in there. All of our bakers are in there. I can stand at the Passet Spoon and look across the street through my windows, and I can see them rolling croissants for the next day. So that's awesome. And then behind us is our third restaurant called Demi. And Demi is a 20-seat restaurant, which you explained, and we do tasting menus. It's a really small restaurant, very, very focused. We don't tell you how many courses you're going to get. We don't tell you the kind of food we're necessarily going to cook, but we do that all with sort of, you know, fun mystery. You know, it's not meant to be kitschy. So, and then we just announced a new restaurant that we're opening, which will be three blocks from Spoon. We're partnering with the Four Seasons. They're opening up a hotel here in Minneapolis, and we're going to open up a restaurant, a bar, and a cafe there.
Wow, amazing.
Yeah.
I've told you this every time I see you about how I'm gonna visit you. I still need to get to Minneapolis, and I will come one day and visit and see all your places, which all sound so wonderful. So over this past year though, I mean, I know it's been so challenging, and you talked a bit about the change with Belcor, but with the Four Seasons and like your plans, how much change this year with what you, I guess you were envisioning and how your restaurant group has adapted to the times and your team. I mean, tell me a little about how it's been for you, because I know it's been quite a year.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's been a year. that's for sure.
It's hard to believe too.
Yeah, it is. But you know, I've said this to our team, and I've said this to other people, but I genuinely believe that we are a better company today than we were 12 months ago. I think that what's happened in the last year has challenged us in ways that we never anticipated. It allowed us to fail over and over again publicly. It allowed us to try things and watch them fail. It allowed us to try things and watch them succeed. It made us vulnerable in ways that we had never really experienced before as a group. And it brought our group stronger and closer together. I created a document that I use daily called my Dream Weaving Document of 2021. And the only thing that's allowed to be in the document is it has to live by the three things that I put in it up top, which is one, you won't fail. Two, you'll help others along the way. And three, this is the year in which you will build the foundation for the future. So whatever we dream up below those three points can stay in the document. And the document lives a lot and it changes a lot. But I just think that for me personally, taking a step back and really digesting what the last year was all about, you know, in the most simplest of terms for me, you know, I was very quick to give up my time to do events or to do dinners or whatever it was. You know, it was easy for me to give that time away. And the one thing that COVID gave us all back is time, whether we wanted it or not, and whether it was too much or not, or whether we actually had to think about things a confined environment or not, but it gave us time. And I kind of took my time to walk away from that and recognize that the time is really valuable for me to spend where I am and with my team and try to be as present as I can with them. And if we're going to continue to grow and build more restaurants, we need to really understand why we're doing it. And if it's not valuable, then it's just not worth it. And that's okay. You know, it's been a really tough year, but it's been a really incredible year to learn about what it is that we really want to do moving forward and how important it is to just be flexible through things. You know, we created this new brand called GK at Home, which is like this whole virtual cooking demo program that, I mean, went from like our first demo we did had 100 and something people on it. And then our third one had basically 1,000 people on it. And it just continues to grow. It's remarkable.
Yeah, that's incredible. And that's a partnership with Williams-Sonoma and Allclad, I believe.
Yeah, yep, that's right.
And yeah, that's Yeah, it's, I mean, everything you said is really great. And you're right, it did give us time. And I feel you've used your time very wisely, which not surprised at all. But let me ask you my question from my last guest on episode 285. I had on Liz Newmark. She's the founder and chair of Great Performances, New York City's premier catering and events company. So her question is, what was your inspiration for embarking on the family community health aspect? We're all thinking about Minneapolis differently since the summer with the murder of George Floyd, wondering how that affected your work and how you think about diversity and equity differently in the industry, with it being at the ground zero to the rebirth of the Black Lives Matter movement. She also noted she spent a lot of time on your website, and it was absolutely beautiful with your patronage to local farms and supporting support of the community. And I believe she's, you know, referring to you as being the co-founder of Heart of the House Foundation that you started.
So the Heart of the House was a foundation we created literally 5 days after COVID shut all the restaurants down. And the intention of that foundation was to bridge a gap. Yeah, it was quick.
I thought you were going to say like 5 months, like 5 days. No, like, wow.
It was 5 days. So a friend of mine who I sit on the board with mentor Sean, who's an attorney, I called him up because I had noticed that Danny Meyer was doing something with his gift cards, and I can't remember what it was, but I think it was like every gift card sale would then go to this 501c3 nonprofit. And I saw very quickly how a lot of restaurants around the country were creating these GoFundMe pages. And I think that that's great, and I think it's honorable, but it was not me, and it didn't feel like that was something that we would want to do long term. And I've always had the dream to create some sort of nonprofit within our group that would benefit the team. So what better time than to do it then? So 5 days after COVID hit, I called Sean and I said, hey, Danny Meyer created this 501c3. Do you know how to do that for me? He says, yeah, I did it for him. I said, great, let's do it. And it was done. And so what it basically does is we've been taking, you know, my wife and I seeded the donations with $10,000 right out of the gates. And the intention was really to get people to donate publicly, non-publicly, corporately, privately, however they wanted to. And we take applications from our teams, past and present and current, and we help them bridge that gap, especially during the times in which we were all forced to be closed. I don't sit on the board. We have a board of directors who run that, and they sift through the applications and the whole process. We see that that organization and that foundation will live on to be more, and we're still kind of dreaming up what that looks like. But, you know, everything that's happened in the last year in Minneapolis and, you know, happened in the last 3 days in Minneapolis with another young man being shot, you know, it's a very triggering experience to be in all of it again. And we're certainly at the ground zero of it. But if we're at the ground zero of what could effectively be some significant and powerful change, it's a pretty powerful place to be right now. And to see the effect that it has on the culture and the effect that it has on the community. You know, there's a lot of, you know, the word unity and community are together, right? So there's a lot of that right now, and you can see it, you can feel it, you can hear it, you know, and it's a really powerful thing to experience and to be a part of. And so, you know, certainly I think that one of the ways that we talked about it with the team yesterday, you know, it's like, let's just talk about it, right? What is it that's going on, and how do we help sort of get through what all of that looks like? And certainly I think that it's something that is now in front of us and in front of our generation to make that change. But we have the energy to do it, and we also need the generation before us that has a lot of knowledge to help get through that change as well.
Yeah. I love that. I never thought about community with unity in that way, the word. I'm like,
yeah.
It's true. And you've also, I know, worked closely with Allison Arth of Salt and Row, who's a past guest on my show, who I think is amazing.
Yeah, she's great.
So, yeah, I love that
Yeah, so she and I co-founded that foundation together. And so she works with us and she works with our team. She lives here in Minneapolis as well. So we spend a lot of time together, which is awesome.
Yeah, she made the move. I remember, I don't know, I saw her. Well, she was part of a host conference I did last January, so in 2020. So yeah. That was the last time I saw her. I miss you guys.
I know.
So we'll have to get soon. We'll see each other in person, hopefully, you know.
I hope so.
Reunited. So let's talk a little bit about Fiden's new book, which I have here. And I have to say, you know, I'd seen pictures, but when it came in the mail, I was like, wow, this is like a book. This is like a really big, thick book. It's entitled Today's Special, 20 Leading Chefs Choose 100 Emerging Chefs. And you're in the book as Danielle Ballou, as he selected you as an emerging chef. Tell me about your participation in this book and the recipes that you chose to be a part of it.
Yeah, it was cool. So yeah, Danielle picked myself. I know Melissa Rodriguez, who's a part of it as well, who had some good press this week coming out with her purchase of Del Posto, which is exciting.
Really cool news.
Yeah. Melissa and I, she worked at Danielle when I was at Cafe Balloud. So our paths crossed through all of that, which was really exciting. It's going to be so cool to see what she does with that. And this book is really exciting for us because, you know, Danielle picks us as sort of the next emerging chefs. James Kent is a part of it in our group, and Dave Barron's a part of it in our group. And then the chef up in Toronto, Patrick Chris, is a part of it as well. And so, you know, Danielle picks us and then we get to come up and talk about recipes and talk about what we've created and why and how his mentorship for me has meant so much. I mean, you know, I still talk to Danielle a lot, of course, and we still are very, very close. And, you know, it's amazing to be able to, you know, I'll tell you a funny story. So in 2005, I think I read Letters to a Young Chef, the very first edition of the one that he wrote. And I remember reading it and thinking to myself, like, I have to work for him. He's so great. I really love what he's writing and it's really exciting. And so I, of course, then went to go work for him. And maybe 2 years later, or 2 years ago, rather, he wrote me an email and said, I'm rewriting Letters to a Young Chef as a second edition, and I would really like for you to write a chapter in this book for us about discipline. And I said, of course. But it was just what a full circle moment to have read the book and thought, I have to work for this person, and now then to be able to write a chapter. And then this is sort of another chapter in our friendship, and his mentorship is him putting me in this book and allowing me to use my voice and show off our restaurant and show off this town and what it is we do here. So it's such a blessing to be able to do that.
Yeah, it's terrific. And I feel very honored too that I was able to interview him on this show. I don't know, maybe it was like 2 years ago, and he was planning his new restaurant, the one that's going over by Grand Central, and they just announced, I don't know, a week or two ago, it's like, it's getting ready to open. It's soon. Yeah. And I'm very excited about that. I don't know how he does everything he does. He just seems to accomplish a lot in a day and his whole career. I mean, it's... So having him as a mentor is that's certainly very special, I would imagine. And what about the recipes you have in the book? How did they get? How did you choose those, or did Danielle work with? Yeah.
So the pot roast recipe, that was one of my grandmother's recipes, Dorothy's pot roast. That was her name, Dorothy. And so that's sort of a tribute to her and what she taught me for that recipe. What makes that recipe unique is actually she didn't use potatoes. She would always use rutabaga, which is not used at a lot of places, but she loved rutabaga. Yeah. And it would give it a little bit of sweetness and it would make the sauce a little thick, but not too cloudy like potato starch normally does. And then the spaghetti Nero is a little tip to the Cafe Blued times. I created that dish when I was at Cafe Blued. And so I took a version of that and put it on our menu here at Spoon. And so that's sort of a little tribute to that. And the honey and cream cake is a dish that Diane Mua, our pastry chef, created 6 years ago, maybe more, 6.5 years ago when we opened Spoon. And it's just been one of those menu items that have stayed on the menu forever, because if we were to take it off, people would be very upset. Very upset. So, yeah.
Yeah, I know those dishes. I've heard about those dishes.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, well, cool. I think rutabaga is an underappreciated
totally.
Vegetable.
Completely.
So, oh, cool. So before we take a break, let's just, one more question. What advice would you give to someone who wants to be a chef, a restaurateur, especially like now and where we've, you know, with the pandemic and moving forward with their careers of what they want to inspire to do?
I mean, I think, you know, as always, you know, it takes a lot of patience, but now seems like such an incredible time to be a part of it, because you can innovate in a way that's never really been accepted before in our profession. And I think that that's really exciting. You know, I think there's a lot of opportunity for change. I think there's a lot of opportunity for diversification of our business and of our profession and where it looks to grow. And I think that as a result, you know, you're going to see a lot of new things sort of pop up and become a different version of itself in front of us. And I think that that in and itself is so important. And so, you know, I think more than anything, I would tell anybody that's aspiring to be a chef or to be a restaurateur or whatever it is, Danielle always taught me to be curious. And be genuinely curious about things. And I think that that still stands the test of time.
Yeah, it's good advice. Okay, so let's take a little break and we will come back. We'll play my speedrun game. We'll talk some industry news. I have my solo dining experience and the final question. So stay with us. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network.
Just Egg is now the fastest growing egg brand in the United States. Bring more plant-based consumers in your doors with easy to use Just Egg. You can get started with a free sample. Just head to ju.st/hrn. That's ju.st/hrn. Made from plants, Just Egg is a better egg for you and for the planet. It's healthier, with no cholesterol and less saturated fat, and it's more sustainable. Just Egg uses less water and generates fewer carbon emissions. Most importantly, it's delicious. For our listeners who operate a food service establishment, you can get a sample for free. Head to ju.st/hrn. That's ju.st/hrn. Just Egg makes a delicious plant-based addition to any menu. It's available as a liquid scramble, great for omelets, frittatas, stir fries, and French toast. There's also a frozen pre-baked folded version that's ideal for filling breakfast sandwiches or topping salads. Chef Jose Andres calls Just Egg mind-blowing, and Bon Appetit says, "It's so good, I feel guilty eating it." Put the fastest-growing egg brand on your menu. Get a free sample of Just Egg for your restaurant at ju.st/hrn.
Did you know that 93% of guests browse online menus before deciding where to go? Well, it's true. Your cocktail menu is the most important marketing, sales, and merchandising tool that you have. It influences drink choice and enhances your guests' experience. Plus, a well-designed menu can also help your bar be more profitable. Menus today are not just pieces of paper. They should also be thoughtful and easy to find online. Diageo Bar Academy has resources to help you not only design a cocktail menu for increased sales, but also learn how to share digital menus that reach more people before they even step inside your door. Visit DiageoBarAcademy.com for free downloadable tools, e-learning courses, and other resources for you and your bar staff. Diageo Bar Academy provides engaging learning opportunities through both physical and digital channels, with ongoing support at every stage. Again, visit DiageoBarAcademy.com. That's D-I-A-G-E-O BarAcademy.com. Stay informed, get inspired, and equip yourself and your team with the tools for success. Welcome back to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Sherry Bayer. My guest today is Gavin Kaysen. He's an award-winning chef and the founder of Swan Ye Hospitality Group, which includes Spoon and Stable, Demi, and Bellacore Bakery at Cooks of Crocus in Minneapolis. And he's also a featured chef in new book from Fiden, Today's Special, 20 Leading Chefs Choose 100 Emerging Chefs. So, Gavin, it is time for my speed round game. What this is I'm going to name a couple things, and you get to pick your preference, such as chocolate or vanilla.
Okay.
You ready?
I'm ready. I think so.
Yeah, I think you are. Okay, here we go. Eat in or eat out?
Eat out.
Wine, beer, cocktail, soft cocktail, or champagne?
What's a soft cocktail?
It's my way of now saying
like zero an NA proof, cocktail?
Non-alcoholic, yeah. Mocktail is another word for it. But I'm going with soft these days.
I'll take a soft cocktail.
Okay, there you go. Tasting menu or a la carte?
Good question. A la carte.
Small plates or large plates?
Small.
Communal table or chef's counter?
Communal table.
Tipping or all-inclusive charge?
All-inclusive.
Mentoring others or being mentored?
Both. mentoring others.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, we talked in the, so far in the show about your mentors, but I know you mentor a lot of people. So.
I do, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, a few more. It's a very easy one. Spoon or fork?
Spoon.
Yeah, naturally. I figured that's what you were going to go with.
What if I said spork? Spork.
I would be shocked. cheese plate or dessert?
Dessert.
Manhattan, Brooklyn, or Minneapolis?
I mean, I have to say Minneapolis. I'm here.
Yeah, I was thinking I don't really know the boroughs of Minneapolis, but yeah, you have to. You're there.
Yeah, exactly.
Awesome. You're fast. That's the game.
I love it.
So for industry news, I have an article that was in the New York Times entitled, As Diners Return, Restaurants Face a New Hurdle, Finding Workers. Owners across the country report a shortage in help as rebounding business forces them to compete for a shrunken pool of applicants. And this was by Brett Anderson. Figure you're probably familiar with this, and who better talk to you about this, but it's basically talking about how there's a staffing shortage, which owners and chefs at full-service restaurants are staying is very low. It's, I think there's, because there's a lot more job openings coming up all at the same time, and from what I understand, there's always been a bit of a challenge with hiring in the kitchen, but it feels, it seems now is even more so. So what's happening with you? Are you having difficulty with this as well?
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, Brett's from Minnesota. His dad, oh. Waylon Anderson was our governor when he was a kid.
Oh, who knew?
Yeah. His dad is very famous for being on the cover of Time magazine, holding a Northern Pike fish. But listen, staffing is tough. I mean, we face it, you know, right now. Thankfully we're okay in the team that we have. Numbers wise, we're doing okay. but we're always looking for people, and it is harder to find people now than I've ever seen it before in my life. Every single restaurant, as you said, is hiring every single position. And so I don't really know where everybody is. I don't know if they've left the industry in whole. I don't know if they're not ready to come back to it. I'm not really sure exactly what it looks like. But it's been a challenge. There's no doubt about that. I think we were, you know, we opened up in the summer for a little bit because we were allowed to open up at a 50% occupancy. So we did that. And then we were all shut down again. And then when we reopened the second time, we lost a few people on that second shutdown, which wasn't a huge surprise, just because I think at that point you're like, are they going to, you know, we're going to close again and again and again. What am I doing? But now that we've been able to open up the second time, it feels better. I would say 95% of our team has been vaccinated. So that feels really good as well. We were able to set up a pharmacy actually inside of the restaurant and do the whole company and do some businesses around our street as well. We just sort of set up shop and they all came in and did their thing and then left. So, you know, we're just trying to find ways to help each other get in front of it that way right now. But it's been hard to find people. It's crazy. I mean, it's like, you know, you see every restaurant in the country looking for people right now. If I'm a young cook, it's just like, take a seat back and see how you can negotiate.
Yeah, well, that's actually there was a quote in the article from Katie Button down in Asheville, and that's exactly what she said. She said, "Everybody in the world is hiring at the same time, and this probably has never happened. This hasn't never happened before." So, and I think it is. You know, people have, I think during this period have maybe decided to leave the industry or just take time off or move home or just keep collecting their unemployment checks or whatever it is, but. I was trying to think like, what's the solution, which I'm not sure what it is.
I don't know. I mean, I think it's going to take some time. I think it's going to take time to get people to come back and work. And I think, you know, naturally, I mean, at least where I am here, we're allowed 75% occupancy inside, but you still have to be socially distanced by 6 feet. So as a result, I can only fit about 40% of occupancy inside a Spoon and Stable. I can fit 50% at Demi. And so that requires a tighter group and a tighter staff. Once we are allowed to be at 100% occupancy or have a bigger patio or whatever that might be, we will certainly see we will certainly need more people, which is going to be big.
Yeah. We'll stay tuned to see that. And people know restaurants are hiring. If you need a job. The other article I had was just big news. I figured it was worth mentioning here is in Food & Wine on their F&W Pro website. The title is Squarespace has acquired Tock for more than $400 million. Alinea Group's Nick Kokonis will remain CEO of the newly acquired reservation platform. And this was by Osette Babur. And Nick has also been on this show before. And big congratulations to him. I mean, this is huge. And Tock reservation platform has, I think, during this past year, he was able to sort of transition it a bit. And really, I think from what I saw, grow the business. He had a Tock 2.0 kind of integrating the reservation system with takeout and delivery. And it's like a huge acquisition. So acquisition, I should say. So do you use Tock at all, Gavin?
Yeah, we do. Yep. Yeah. Nick's a really good friend. And I'm super happy for he and all of his team that were able to get that done. It's a massive deal. And I know he takes a lot of pride into what he has created and what they have created there. I know he's always tried to better the experience for the restaurant and for the guests. And so when we opened Spoon and Stable, we originally started with a different platform. We had OpenTable when we first started, and then we moved to Tock, I think about a year after we opened. And the only reason we didn't start with Tock was because at the time, this is 7 years ago, at the time, you could only use that platform for either prepaid reservations or deposits. And I was nervous to do that in the market here. And what, you know, I'll give Nick a lot of credit for a lot of things, but one of the things that he was always amazing at was listening to my feedback and to our feedback here from our team. And so we would reach out to him and say, listen, you know, we don't really feel comfortable doing the deposit thing in a restaurant that's a la carte. And we want people to be able to feel flexible to walk in and out. And, you know, shortly thereafter, the reservation system changed. And so people could make a free reservation and it didn't have to be a deposit. But we use the prepaid version of Tock at Demi. And it's a gift. You know, I will tell you, the first year of reservations we had at Demi, we had we do 40 people a night at that restaurant, 200 people a week, okay? Approximately 800 people a month. And out of all of the people in which we served in an entire month, I believe that entire year we had 8 no-shows. That's it.
Wow.
And that's because of the prepay, you know, and yeah. It's a big difference. And it makes a huge difference for a restaurant, and it makes a huge difference for our top line and our bottom line and how we pay our team and how we stay equitable and how we pay a living wage to people. And all of that has a trickle-down effect. And the reservation system is not about comfort and convenience. It's got to be about quality as well. And Tock delivered on all three fronts, in my opinion. And it's one of the reasons why I'm adamantly supportive of what it is that they've created. And while I will always use them in my restaurants moving forward.
Wow, that's really wonderful. Yeah, they have much more of a presence now with New York City restaurants, and for the reasons he's changed and added new services. And because at the beginning it was, every time I used it as a customer, it was at a top rated restaurant with a tasting menu, you know, kind of like very, very special experiences, and it's. So he's, I give him a lot of credit for what he's created and his ability to adapt and his whole team, and huge congratulations to you, Nick.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So just a reminder, everyone, that I have All in the Industry swag available on my website, allintheindustry.com/merch. And I'm donating 100% of the proceeds of my hat sales to the Independent Restaurant Coalition through May 31st. So go check it out and help support a great cause and get some cool hats. Hats, many I hats. It. I like my hats. They're sandwich hats. That's the term for the style. So go check it out, and much appreciated. So time for my solo dining experience. So this week it's at Nan Chang Chow Long Bao. And here's the rundown. The location, 3916 Prince Street, number 104 in Flushing, Queens, on the second floor of One Fulton Square, which is an outdoor mall. The concept, it's a Shanghainese restaurant known for its soup dumplings. The owners are from Shanghai, China, and opened in Flushing in 2006. So why'd I go? Well, I was out at Citi Field for my second vaccine shot, and it's one train stop away, and so it was a perfect excuse to go. And actually, I went here the second time. I did go to another place the first time. I made it my outing for both of my shots, which I was very grateful to get. So my experience. So after my appointment, I walked over for an early dinner. It was like a 10-minute walk. And I found they had these cute little booths or like nooks upstairs that were, you know, I had my own little space. It seats about 4 people. It had a sliding glass door. It was let in all the open air. And it was nice. It was a nice day out. So I ordered, I ate, and I actually got some more food to go. And service was really efficient. And I had a great meal. So what did I get? I got their Lucky Six dumplings, which had one signature scallop Chinese squash, chicken, crab meat, and pork, and black truffle. So one of each of those, and they're all very different colors, bright and pretty, matching the food. And I also got pan-fried pork dumplings and scallion pancake with sliced beef, and they also brought complimentary tea. So my take, everything was delicious. The soup dumplings were great. I think my favorites were the crab meat and pork and the black truffle, which was unexpected. I don't know if I'd had a black truffle soup dumpling before. And the other dumplings and the pancakes were very tasty. So the ambiance, as I said, was this like cute little nook with the sliding doors upstairs on the second floor. And inside, they were also open. It was a more of a bustling, casual type dining room, I would say. I'd say this is perfect for Chinese food and dumpling cravings. Interesting tidbit, the restaurant has been a Michelin-recommended Shanghainese restaurant in New York since 2007. They've been featured on many websites, including Serious Eats, New York Magazine, and Eater as the city's best soup dumplings. And personal fun fact, while there, I guess you say, while in Flushing, I got more food to go because why not? I got some pork buns and some shumai that I took with me. And I also, across the street, there's a place called White Bear that's known for their wontons with hot sauce. So I picked that up too on the way home. So I had lots of leftovers for more meals. The cost of this dinner with my leftovers there was $38. That's not including tax and gratuity. Would I go back? Yes. And their website is nansheng.chaolongbao.com. And it's very long, so I'm not going to spell it, but if you Google it, you can find it. So there we go. Gavin, have you ever been out to Flushing? I'm just curious.
I have.
Cool.
I've never been there, but I've been out to Flushing for sure.
Yeah, it's actually so easy to get there. You just take the seven trains straight out. I feel like I don't get out there enough. So I'm glad I did. Okay, so it's time for the final question. My next guest is Diana Tandia. She is the chef and owner of Berber Street Food, which is an African cafe in New York City's West Village featuring African street food. So Gavin, can you please ask a question for Diana?
Yeah, so my question to her, there was an article that came out here that was written by a gentleman named Yia Vang, and he worked for us here at Spoon and Staple, and he's opening up a restaurant. He's Hmong, and he's opening a restaurant here. And he wrote a really beautiful article in our newspaper talking about how when a guest comes to him, a guest came to him and asked him to create one of the Hmong sausages, but to make it vegan. And of course there was no disrespect in that question. They were just asking for their event, but it led him down this path of explaining why the food that they cook in their culture is so important and has such an incredible story behind it. I found the article both fascinating and intriguing. And what I really was inspired when I was listening to the article reading the article and listening to him speak, and I've known him for a while, was that food does have a story behind it. So what it sounds to me that she's running is I would love to learn how she would respond to that if she was able to cook her food exactly how she wanted to and not have to alter anything and to be able to storytell through her cuisine, if that would alter the way that she cooks.
Wow. I'm going to ask her. I can't wait to hear how she answers too. Well, that's great. Thank you. And great story behind your question. So, well, cool. Well, thank you so much. I wish we could just go on and talk more and more. But this has been such a treat to get to catch up with you and hear what you've been up to. And I've always been so impressed with everything you've done, and I know I will continue to be because you're just that guy. So thank you so much, Gavin. So my guest today has been Gavin Kaysen. He's the award-winning chef and founder of Soigne Hospitality Group, which includes Spoon and Staple, Demi, and Bellacourt Bakery at Cooks of Crocus Hill in Minneapolis. He's also featured in a new book from Fiden called Today's Special, 20 Leading Chefs Choose 100 Emerging Chefs, and it's now available. You can find Gavin, his website is stayswanye.com, and you can also find him on social media at Gavin Kaysen, and the book is at Fiden Snaps and hashtag Today's Special. You can find me at Sherry Bayer at Bayer PR and at All Industry. My Facebook page is All in the Industry. My websites are BayerPublicRelations.com, SherryBayer.com, and AllInTheIndustry.com. All of our shows are archived at HeritageRadioNetwork.org. We are also on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify. Thanks, as always, to my engineer today, Amanda Wang. Thanks to Gavin, as well as Heather, Jasmine, and Alex for helping me set this up. I'm Sherry Bayer. We are on our spring break now here at Heritage Radio. So my next show will be on Wednesday, May 5th. Till then, stay safe and well, and thank you for being part of All in the Industry. Bye. All in the Industry is powered by Simplecast. I'm Sherry Bayer, and you're listening to Heritage Radio Network, a member-supported podcast network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. This year, HRN is celebrating 10 years of food radio. For the past decade, we've been taking you behind the scenes of farms, restaurants, breweries, school cafeterias, and more. It's been 10 years, and we're just getting started. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.